another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Hi, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. This is a Friday morning podcast. It's 85 degrees, beautiful right now in Dallas-Fort Worth as I head up to Frisco to spend the day at my office. And we're going to be seeing 100 plus degrees today, and we're going to see 100 plus degrees for the next week straight. And as I've said before, we got absolutely no rainfall whatsoever from the hurricane that hit South Texas. That hurricane, in spite of what I thought, in spite of what the media said, did strengthen from a Category 1 to a Category 2, did pretty significant damage. But the folks down there seem to be weathering it pretty well. There's millions and millions of dollars worth of damage. Hopefully insurance companies are going to step up and do what they're supposed to do. Our illustrious Governor Rick Perry was down there talking about building levees on the Rio Grande River because, you know, people could get flooded if a Category 5 ever comes in. To me, I want to call that grandstanding. Where was he back when... back during when Katrina hit, saying the same thing about his people then? He was already your governor, and, where has he been for the past few years? The natural disaster hits, and this guy runs down there and uses it as an opportunity to grandstand. Maybe I'll do one day a podcast on Rick Perry just to let people outside the state of Texas know how deep the sleeves sometimes run within a party which I've actually supported a great deal, which is the Republican Party. But today we're not going to talk about that. I just kind of wanted to point out that we just had this little hurricane, and a Cat 2 is considered a little hurricane, that it did a lot of damage, that it caused a lot of problems, that it impacted a lot of lives. And it's just one more example of that we don't have to have the end of the world as we know it. We don't have to have global conspiracies. We don't have to have black helicopters flying. We don't have to have anything like that. We don't have to have anything sensationalistic for people's lives to be drastically altered in but a second. And that's the reality that we've seen from what I would call a relatively mild as they go hurricane. And I know mild hurricane is kind of an oxymoron. It's like saying mild, a mild tornado. And excuse me, folks are going to jerk that just doesn't want me to get over a lane here. But I'm going to cut him off. There you go. Good job, buddy. Anyway, you know what? I'm not even going to edit that out. Because I've been told by some of you guys that you'll like that. And I've also been asked recently, my last podcast, how I managed to talk and drive at the same time and concentrate. Well, you know what? I just do it. I do it just like you might when you're talking to your spouse on the way home from work about what to pick up from the grocery store. I have a lapel mic. It's not much different than having an earpiece plugged in. Anyway, what I was making a point about there is that, we just have to be aware that there's always something that can come down upon us. And that's why we need to be preparing. And gardening is not really the best way to prepare for a hurricane, but it is a great way to prepare for other events and things such as, having your weight just drop severely or just getting out of the system. And, we have a saying here that what we want to do is we want to teach you how to live the life that you want if times get tough or even if they don't get tough. And what I mean by that is most people realize now that our system is flawed. And you not only want, in some ways, you want to see some components of the system fail. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to see this real breakdown of society, okay? There's some, like, fringe elements that really did it. They envision this Mad Max world where they're, like, Joe Badass, and, they're out there living life hard and rough and protecting a small band of freedom fighters or something like that. The Red Dawn type scenarios and stuff. Folks, it's not very realistic. It's just not the way society works, and it's a good thing society doesn't work that way, or, it wouldn't be held together right now. But there are some parts of the system, this predatory system, the imposed socialism, and folks, I've done a podcast on socialism, I'm going to go into it more, but don't look over to Europe and the UK and the Canada and go, they're socialists and we're not, because there's many elements of our country that's socialist now. But unfortunately, we still have enough freedom. And when I say live the life you want, even if times don't get tough, what I'm talking about is utilizing the system to a point where your efforts and your talents and your work pay off enough for you to earn enough and then smartly invest it. And I don't mean invest it just in the stock market or real estate investing. I'm talking about investing it in things like improving your own land, buying a piece of property and completely paying it off, being smart about where you do it, doing all these things, and then doing things like making gardening a component of what you do to produce some of your own food to reduce your dependence on other people. Every step you take to reduce your dependence on somebody else, you increase your independence at the same time. Every step you take to dig yourself deeper into the system, buying another new car, buying anything that you put debt on, any situation you put yourself into, you buy a small piece of property where you can't grow anything. Now you can't grow anything. Okay, now you're stuck with that. So more dependence. So finding independence. Gardening, again, great way to do that. And what we're going to talk about today is the role that heirloom vegetables play in that, why heirloom vegetables are important, and what my socialist buddy up there in Canada was dead on when he called the monetization of the food system and to the seeds of the world. And what he meant by monetization is that there's a company called Monsanto, one of the biggest corporations in the world. Billions and billions of dollars. Many people have never heard of them. And these guys are behind, like, you know, some gardening and agricultural products and fertilizers. Like, these are the guys behind Roundup and all its all the generic versions thereof. And they make money on every bottle of that junk sold across the United States that's designed to kill plants. And is suspected of having some very negative effects on people, especially if, you know, those pregnant women are exposed to it. You can look this stuff up. I'm not going to do a kick Monsanto in the head organization show today, but it's important to understand that there is this organization out there called Monsanto, and one of the things they're doing is they're actually patenting seeds so that a farmer can't save his seed from one year to the next. That when, you know, even if he doesn't have a hybrid seed that doesn't reproduce, that if it's a patented Monsanto variety, that he has to go back to the well and buy more seed. Instead of saying, I'm going to take 10% of my crop, leave it for seed, harvest it for seed, reserve the seed and replant it. No, you can't do that because we own the rights to the seed. That's what Monsanto's doing. And part of this big movement has been to move people more and more into using hybrid variety of vegetables. A hybrid is pretty simple. I'm going to explain it, though, for those that may not know. A hybrid is simply I take variety one of a pepper and variety two of a pepper, and I cross-pollinate them. This is not laboratory work. This is not genetic modification. Hybridization is a natural process that occurs in the wild. The problem is that many hybrids, for one or maybe two generations, actually produce a much more desirable vegetable. They might have more vigorous growth. That's typically referred to as what's called hybrid vigor. They may produce more disease resistance, and they may combine, let's say, the disease resistance of one variety with a large size and thick wall pepper of another. Okay? So hybrids in themselves are not bad. The problem is, by the second or third generation, by the time you go down to the store and you buy a green pepper that was a really beautiful pepper, and you say, I'm going to make a salad out of that, save the seeds out of it, and you plant those seeds, you don't get the pepper that you ate. In fact, you might cut no pepper at all. You might get sterility issues, or it just doesn't produce, or it produces a really crappy version of the parent fruit. And every generation thereafter, the quality declines. So if you get the entire agricultural population either using your patented seeds or hybrid seed, you create an endless supply of business for yourself, because every year when the plants need to be replanted, they have to come back to you and buy from you again. That's what Monsanto has done. And they're enforcing their will across the world. Fortunately for you, the individual, the odds that you're going to go out and save some seeds and have Monsanto come beat on your door are quite low. And if you use what are called heirloom variety vegetables, in most instances, you won't even have to worry about it. And the difference between a hybrid and heirloom vegetable, heirloom vegetables, actually some kinds are even in themselves some form of a hybrid way back in the breeding, but it was a hybrid that worked, that took off, that produced a long-term repetitive quality product. But a heirloom vegetable, if you plant, let's say, one variety of heirloom pepper, and you plant them in one bed, and you keep them separated from other peppers so you don't get cross-pollination, and you save some of the seeds from that crop and plant them next year, you'll get exact copies of the parent generation. And you can do it again, and again, and again, and again. Now the beauty of this from a self-sufficiency standpoint is eventually if you figure out the maximum amount of food that your land can produce or that you desire to produce with it, and the specific varieties that you most want to produce, and you get yourself into a cycle where you're producing your food and reserving seed each year, and reserving some extra seeds. If you have a crop failure, you have seed from a previous season to reestablish that crop with. Eventually, you can not only have a garden that makes you independent from the grocery store, but a garden process that makes you independent from a seed catalog. And that is one real move away from the system. And it's also, you know, if we do have the big old shit hits the fan scenario that some people predict, will there be a Burpee catalog or a Harris seed catalog or a Park seed catalog? Or do you seed from? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So if you have that independence and you have a huge global cataclysm, but there is enough, you know, let's say sustainability to go ahead and at least grow your own crops, you have independence. On the other side of this, and remember, it's even if times don't get tough, if you garden this way, you have the ability to provide for yourself, your family, and your neighbors, right, from yourself, from what you have. And there's great seed exchanges, too, where if you have a really good variety of tomato, maybe you're looking for a really good variety of carrot, and you can exchange seeds. Now, I want to talk about something that we don't really hear about a lot when we read and learn about heirloom vegetables, and that is the difference between improving heirloom varieties versus improving a particular variety of fruit through hybridization. Here's what I mean by that. Anybody can, in and of themselves, take on and make a better quality product over successive generations. This is what we call the lazy way and what we call the time-tested, true, and proven method. And here's what I mean by that. In the lazy method, what you do is you do exactly what I described. I've got a pepper that's extremely disease-resistant. I've got a pepper that grows very large, thick-walled fruit. And they're very similar varieties. And I cross-pollinate them, and next year I plant the seed. I plant that seed, and I get a great big pepper, thick-walled, that's highly disease-resistant. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm great, I'm happy. So as long as I have the parent stock, I can keep producing that hybrid over and over again. The problem, though, is I've now reached the limit of what that hybrid can do with a natural process. Let me explain that to you very carefully. This is important. So a lot of times when people hear hybrid seed, they start thinking genetic modification, laboratories, guys in white coats. No, no, no. Hybridization is a natural process. It just has a limit. And if that hybrid can only go to maybe the F2 generation, or like its daughter seeds can produce one more generation and then kind of dwindles, that first crossbreeding was the maximum that I could do to improve quality. I've gotten an excellent result. More disease resistant, larger pepper, thick wall. Excellent, excellent result, but I've reached my limit. Let's look at another way of doing this. We start with the pepper, an heirloom variety that's thick-walled and large, not as disease-resistant as we want it to be. What we do is we plant extra of that variety for a season. We plant, let's say if we're going to normally plant 12 varieties of a pepper, or 12 plants of one pepper variety, we plant 24 to give us a greater diversification. We plant them all in a nice small lot away from all other pepper plants and anything else that might be able to crossbreed with them. We let them grow through the year. At the end of the year, as we're getting to our final harvesting, we look for a pepper that's a perfect pepper, and we look for a plant that has that pepper on that's a perfect plant. The plant that's had the least amount of wilting, the least amount of yellowing of the leaves, the plant that's thrived, that's produced the most thriving fruit. And we try to find four of our 24 plants, and we take one select pepper from each plant. We allow it to fully mature, and we harvest our seed from those four peppers. We separate those seeds, okay, pepper one, pepper two, pepper three, pepper four, and we label them, because when we plant next year, all right, we do not want to plant all the seeds from a single plant, because we get inbreeding. You don't marry your cousin, All right, you really don't marry your sister, folks, hillbillies. You don't marry your sister. All right, that's a rule here with plants too. If you keep producing all your plants from a single plant, single parent plant, you lose genetic diversity. All right, so you're looking to bring out the most positive attributes, right? But with enough inter-plant breeding, that you're not coming from a single plant. You might even want to do six plants if you can get that many quality products. You then do it again. You plant the next year, and again you select the most valuable of the plants, and the most disease resistant of the plants, the most thick walled and largest of the peppers. You keep doing it. The limitation here is it might take six or seven generations to really begin to take one line of an heirloom variety and really begin to refine it and produce the very best of a species for your climate. Okay? The beauty is, it's a never-ending process, a process that we talked about teaching kids lessons, but that if your children choose to live in your same region, your same area, and even if they move, you can do it, but it's better when you keep the seeds in the region that they've been bred for. Never stops. 100 years, 200 years, 300 years of constant improvement. And many of the heirloom vegetables that we have today, these beautiful heirloom tomatoes, peppers, lettuces, and things like that, are the product of centuries of this already happening. The beauty is that you can just continue that legacy, and you can custom tailor varieties of vegetables for your climate. When you plant peppers here in Texas, it's a vastly different climate than, let's say, one of my listeners up in Tennessee. And we might start with the same heirloom variety because it's a good variety that has what it needs to thrive in both the Tennessee foothills and the Texas plains if it's properly cared for. But the seeds that are going to do the very best in his area are different than the ones that are going to do the very best in mine. In five or six generations of doing that down the road, I'm going to have a pepper plant that's optimized for growing in Dallas, Texas. He's going to have a pepper plant that's optimized for growing just north of Memphis, Tennessee. You see, these are the things that start to, again, make you independent of the system and let you begin to produce regionally that which is best for your region. And there's some really good kind of basic rules to follow to get that done and to get that underway, so to speak. The first thing to realize is that when you get into heirloom vegetables, and I'm going to put some links to some sites that offer heirloom vegetable seeds and some seed exchanges and things like that, you realize how many varieties of something as simple as a bell pepper or tomato are really out there. There's countless varieties, and that's beautiful because you can start to produce things you can't even buy in the store. It's not I'm going to produce a big red tomato to replace the big red tomato that I was going to buy in the store. It's I'm going to produce a dark, deep, ruby red tomato with blackish purple stripes on it that has a unique flavor that I can't find in any store anywhere at all. And that's really cool. But the rule that will help you get off to a good start is as you're investigating these heirloom vegetables, learn their sources. Where do they originate from? Okay? And buy a stock source from a climate that's similar to your own. In other words, if you buy a type of pepper that originated in southern Italy, but you're from Maine, I'm not saying it won't work, but you may be better off buying a pepper that was from northern Italy, closer to the mountains, that had a more temperate climate. Or even a variety of pepper that came from Europe. All right? Because that will allow you to start closer to where you are, so to speak. Another thing that you can do to make that work is buy or exchange seeds with somebody that's already been working with seeds in your region. Because those seeds will have already started to develop the inherent characteristics that are most beneficial for your region. So that's kind of a big first step. Identify what you want to grow, the variety you want to grow, but select something that's either already started to have some successive breeding in your region or that comes from a region of the world that's very much like your own. And you might be surprised how similar many regions of the world actually are when it comes to climate. The next thing that you have to really, this is a hard, fast rule. Each plant, each type of plant, like a pepper plant, cucumber plant, melon plant, tomato plant, has rules of separation, as they're called. If you take two varieties of cucumber, plant them in the same bed where they're growing and intertwining with each other, they're going to cross-pollinate, you're going to create hybrids. So you're not going to keep your seed stock pure. So you're not going to be able to go successive generations. So you have to use separation rules. And I'm going to, again, if you go to the survivalpodcast.com, if you haven't gone there directly to listen to this podcast, you download it from iTunes or whatever, you go to the website and you'll be able to link off to some places where there are some rules to how far you have to separate different varieties of plants. To me, like, this is more difficult for the small-scale farmer who's actually plowing up several acres and planting more conventional crops than it is for the home gardener. The home gardener can take what I call an island approach, to raise beds or even if they're in the ground beds, but little beds all over your property, and simply keep the different varieties separated by distances, and you can mitigate the distance a lot of times by planting something that's tall in between them. So let's say you're growing a specific variety of corn, okay? Well, maybe you have a bed of corn, and on one side you have one variety of pepper, and on one side you have another variety of pepper. Then maybe you're going to throw in some tomatoes, and then maybe you put in some pole beans up on a trellis that separate another variety of tomatoes. That'll help create some separation. You still have some cross-pollination issues, but it'll bring them down a level, and if you keep your separation the way you need to, it'll be much better for it. The other thing you can do is simply don't try to grow 400 varieties of a single thing. Grow one or two solid varieties. The next thing you can do to mitigate your cross-pollination is grow what we call early and late varieties. So if you wanted to grow two different tomatoes this year, if you grew an early tomato and then several weeks later planted a later producing tomato, they're actually going to be at a point where they're actually doing pollination and producing at different times. So you're just going to have less cross-pollination altogether just because they're pollinating at different times of the year. So those two rules go a long way toward getting you off to a great start with producing heirloom vegetables in a way that allows you to improve their quality year after year and be self-sufficient with them as well. We also have to think about self-sufficiency beyond just the seeds themselves. If you grow crops year after year, even with proper organic gardening techniques, the plants take from the ground, and you need to have ways to put back into the ground. So composting is an essential part of solid organic heirloom gardening. Everybody should have a good compost bin, compost pit. There's a lot of them out today that are like made out of this Rubbermaid stuff, and I know some folks like want to stay, like I want to build everything myself and be self-sufficient. These things work great and they're fast, and that's what I like about them. And I saw one at Walmart that holds 115 gallons for $44, and I think I'm just going to go ahead and buy two of them. I was going to build a compost bin this weekend, but I think it makes more sense to just buy a couple of these things and start using them for my composting, because I know they produce faster results for me. But you're going to need to be doing things like cutting your stalks down, cutting your plants down, and composting. You're going to need to be growing legumes in some form, shape, or another, beans, peas, and things like that, because they nitrify soil. Especially if you want to produce corn, it's almost impossible to be even close to organic with your corn production if you're not doing legumes. And it's a great rotational philosophy. You grow beans here one season, then you move your beans to another bed, and you move your corns to the bed you grew your beans in last year. When you harvest beans, folks, and then when the plants are done, don't pull them from the ground. Cut the stalks, let the ground rest for a while, and then work the roots of the bean plants into the soil, because those roots have tons of little nitrogen nodules on them, and that will be organically fertilizing, improving the quality of your soil. So these are some things that we can do to kind of get off the ground with this heirloom vegetable gardening and become more and more self-sufficient. The biggest thing I can tell you, though, is learn rules of separation and follow them and utilize succession planting. In other words, planting a variety and then waiting a while to plant your next variety, then planting early and late varieties, doing things like that to just have them blooming at different times. That'll also mitigate that. And again, when you're selecting, like, you might have this plant and it produces this huge, gorgeous pepper, but the plant's just been kind of wilty looking all year. Well, you probably would be better off reserving seed from a plant that produced a very nice pepper, a very large pepper, but the plant itself thrived as well. Then what you're looking to do is you're kind of fine-tuning the quality of your produce to work in concert with the environment where you're going to be growing it on a daily basis. That makes a lot of sense when you think about it. And, you know, again, I want to talk about the difference between using hybridization to do this or genetically modifying with just success in breeding. This, you know, versus the smart man's way versus the lazy man's way. And, you know, I can kind of compare it to, I'm actually a small-scale breeder of reptiles. I breed snakes. And there are people that take, let's say, one variety of boa constrictor from Nicaragua and one variety of boa constrictor from Argentina, and they crossbreed them to produce an animal with a lot of pink in it. Because when you cross those two, you get some pink. And the people that have been doing this type trying to for years that have bred, you know, countless generations, what they'll tell you is, if you just pick animals that have the characteristic you want and continuously rebreed those, it'll take longer, but you'll get an animal that doesn't have kind of the negative consequences of taking two things that really weren't meant to interbreed and forcing them into an interbreeding situation. That's what I see with, you know, selective reproduction of vegetables. In other words, it's co-creation versus playing God. When I look at a tomato and I go, wow, that's a gorgeous tomato, I'm not going to eat that one this year. I'm gonna smash it up and get the seeds out of it and let the goo ferment off the top and reserve those, and I'm going to reproduce more with that plant. That's me taking what nature's provided and simply storing it for next year. When you start doing hybridization, it's still somewhat of a natural process, but it was just limitation. The real problem we have today is we have people out there like Monsanto and other groups doing genetic modification of our produce. And this is the biggest survival reason I can think of to grow your own food. Even if the world doesn't collapse, the fact that you might go buy a pepper or an ear of corn, or eat a corn chip, more likely, that's had a plant that actually had its molecular level, its DNA level, altered by man, we don't know what the consequences of that are. Now, I'm going to not be an alarmist. I'm going to tell you the consequences could be nothing. Could be nothing. It might not, you have no idea, you know, nothing at all. Nothing happens. You might be able to eat genetically modified corn your entire life and have no negative consequences whatsoever. I'm not willing to take the risk, all right, because we don't know. And we're not going to know for a long time. That's the underside of this. We're not going to know what the consequences of mucking around with this stuff is for a long, long time. So I think it's important to garden, not just to separate from your system, separate yourself from the system, not just to create independence, not just because really it's good for your heart, soul, mind, spirit, and body, but because it's a self-defense mechanism. Because these cabals of corporatism have stepped in and they have started to mess with the food supply in ways that I don't believe we were ever intended to do so. So this has been an interesting podcast. I've been wanting to do this show for a while. I was just trying to kick around in my head, you know, how do I do it? Can I make this entertaining? So guys, comment. Let me know. Is this the kind of show you want to hear more shows like this? Do you want to hear more about what's going on with organizations like Monsanto? Do you want to know what they're doing in other parts of the world to impose their will? Is that something you're interested in? If not, I'm not going to do a show on it. I want to appeal to my audience. Do you want more shows on guns? Do you want more shows on basic food storage? Which items do you want to know more about? Go to the blog, thesurvivalpodcast.com, comment on this episode, or use my feedback form and let me know. Remember also, we have a listener appreciation contest going. If you'll agree to tell at least one person about the Survival Podcast and recommend that they listen to it, and you'll fill out one simple form to say you've done it, and it's an honor system, you can win an iPod Nano. We have a goal that I had originally set to September 1st to grow to 1,000 listeners. I've extended that goal to October to make it more likely that somebody's going to win. And that's all you got to do. Fill out the form, and I'll announce who won it, and I'll send you an iPod Nano if you win. If we reach our goal before October 1st, let's say we reach our goal on September 15th, I'm extending the contest, and on October 1st, regardless of how many more people we've gotten to, I'm going to give out a second iPod Nano. Right now, there's a handful of people in the contest. I think it's about 10. So right now, your odds of winning the Nano, if you're in the contest, are 1 in 10. And I'm telling you, I don't see that many people getting on board with doing this. And I think the honor system works. I think people that aren't going to tell, they're not going to cheat. That's why I'm trusting you to do it. So we might end up with, like, say, 50 people in the contest giving out 2 Nanos. That puts your odds at, like, 1 in 25. Even if it's 100, your odds are 1 in 50. That's pretty good odds for helping me grow the show. So, and I'm also looking at some other things I can do. I'm trying to come up with maybe, like, 10 things. Like, I actually authored a book. Maybe I'll give away a few autographed copies of that. And some other things I can do to make sure that more people to participate win, because I want to recognize the people that stick their hand up and say, hey, I'm willing to help you grow this show, Jack. So remember that. Full details, again, are available at thesurvivalpodcast.com. Again, thank you for tuning in. Let me know what you want to hear. Let me know where you want me to go next, and I'll try to give you what you want. And I'll try to help keep you working towards living the life you want to live if times get tough or even if they don't.
Every dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.